It's a family-friendly show. Or it used to be.
This week on The Source, we're going to be discussing some open source news and current events from the past couple of weeks.
We're also going to be talking about server virtualization, specifically the QEMU package.
I'm Ben Weber.
And I'm Aaron Newcomb, and you're watching The Source. Welcome. This is episode one of the IPTV video podcast that we're calling The Source. The Source because it's all about open source, all about the wonderfulness that open source is. So we're kind of here to talk about new things going on. We'll probably be having some interviews, hopefully, with some cool guests coming on the show, talking about the latest in whatever projects they happen to be working on. And we'll do a lot of reviews. We're going to have a review today, and we're going to do some reviews, do some demos, things like that. So just a lot of cool stuff coming up, so we hope you like it. Hope you stay with us here, and we'll try to get as many episodes out as we can. One thing that we're trying to do as part of the show is we're using all open source technologies to create the show, broadcast the show, run the website. It's all based on open source technology. So
makes a cost-effective solution, doesn't it?
Very cost-effective, which is why a lot of businesses run open-source technology these days. But there are some with some of the things we're using, it is a little bit more difficult to find some support, which is what a lot of companies run into when they try to run open-source. For example, we use Cinelera to do all the video editing. And if you don't know Cinelera is that actually it's a very high-end professional tool. Open source tool, but there's not a whole lot of documentation for it, which is what I found doing the shows. It's probably taken me a lot longer to pick up Cinelera than it has, most of the other. Like if I were to just sit down with Adobe Premiere, which is what it's most like, if I was to sit down with Adobe Premiere, I could probably, go on the web, Google Adobe Premiere, and come up with 20 different tutorials on how to use Adobe Premiere, and I could be up and running it pretty quickly. But with Cinelera, it's a great, great program. I love it. But graphically, the interface isn't that great. It's not really intuitive yet, and the documentation, as with a lot of open source projects, leaves a lot to be desired. So, little plug there: get out and go do some documentation for your favorite open source project if you have the time.
Making it work isn't enough.
That's right. Hey, it works, but nobody else knows how to run it. So anyway, that's what the show's about, all about open source technology. And so it's taking us a little bit longer to get episodes out than we first thought. Not only that, but we're real busy. I've got a family, three little kids, and a job, and all that kind of stuff. The holidays come around, nothing gets done. And you've got a full-time job, right? So, that keeps
me busier than most people anyway.
Right. We had to actually delay the taping today because, of an issue that came up at work. So, and Brian, we got to talk about Brian a little bit too. If you looked at the opening credits of the show, you'll notice that Brian Burgess is going to be one of the hosts of the show. But unfortunately, he's a little busy these days running a political campaign. So the primary coming up in May. So he's crazy busy with political stuff right now. So he'll be joining us hopefully even before May. Maybe if we can get about an hour of his time, he'll be joining us as well for at least this opening segment. We can talk about what's going on in the open source arena. We should mention the website. If you haven't been out to the website, it's www, take your pick, thesourceshow.org. if you go out to that website, that's our website, and you'll see, you'll be able to download all the episodes, some of the stuff that I did just to try to work out Cinelair. I posted a few things there. You can download that. You'll be able to download this episode, which you've already done. But you'll be able to download all the episodes out on the website as well. There's polls out on the website. There's links to our Frapper map. Go out and sign up for the Frapper map. Let us know if you're listening, if you like the show, or even if you don't like the show, go out on the Frapper map, let us know where you're from, and it'll be kind of cool to see you know, who's watching us out there. All that stuff will be out there. There's also forums. You can tell us what you like, what you don't like about the show. So definitely go out and check out the website. It's www.thesourceshow.org.
That kind of brings us into one thing, the poll that's on there.
Right, right. Yeah, we did put a poll out there on the website. And do you want to tell us what it is?
I guess there's a poll on the website to pick your favorite Linux distribution. I guess we had, over 100?
Close to 100. I don't know. Let me go out and see.
Actually came in and picked their favorite distribution.
All right. 82. Almost 100.
I voted twice.
I voted four times myself. No. But actually, the distribution I voted for, it didn't even win. The distribution that won the poll was a favorite distribution, like we said, and the distribution that won was Ubuntu. We actually had Red Hat, Fedora load as an option, Debian, Slackware, FreeBSD. I don't know. At 4% voted for FreeBSD. Hey, what can you say? Ubuntu, we just mentioned. Nopix was on there. DSL, Damn Small Linux, Gentoo, and SUSE were all on there. And Ubuntu won with 33% of the votes. So a lot of people are running Ubuntu these days. Ubuntu, Kubuntu, all the different various varieties.
What'd you vote for?
Edubuntu. I voted for Red Hat Fedora because I'm a big Fedora fan. I've been using Red Hat since 96, I want to say, maybe 98. I don't know. I've been running a long time. At least
6.1.
Yeah, exactly. I was on 5.4, 5.1 or 5.4. It was in the fives when I first started.
Really? Yeah, I started on 6.1.
So I was just like, oh, this is great. I did my first install via FTP, and I was like, that was it for me. I was like, no way, this actually worked. I have an OS that runs. It doesn't blue screen, because back then it was Windows NT and blue screened all the time. And yeah, it just worked, and I was able to install it over the internet. It was like, no way, this rules. This is awesome. And really, I think a lot of the things that Red Hat did early on have kind of made it their way into some of the other distributions. You know, the way that they do like their RPMs. Yeah, I mean, you know, RPMs. I didn't even really like RPMs when they first came out. I was more of a diehard.
It was a little frustrating at first.
Oh yeah.
You get the mindset on it, like, oh, it becomes very easy.
Right, right. It's like, yeah, this is okay, not having to compile everything every time.
Right.
I actually voted for Fedora. What'd you vote for?
Red Hat.
Oh, okay. So yeah, we both did. That's probably the 10%
right there. RHCE.
You voted twice. I voted four times. Nobody else voted for Red Hat.
No one else
Fedora.
Picked it except for us. Okay.
But Ubuntu actually came out on top. So that's another thing to do on the website. Go out, and we should have a poll probably once a month or something like that, so people can vote. Leave a comment if you you know, don't like the poll or whatever. You can leave comments on most of the articles and things on the website, so definitely go check it out. The other thing we wanted to mention was after the poll, one thing we're going to do every week in this segment is talk about, you know, news and events, things that are going on in the open source community with Linux or whatever the case might be, our favorite stories from the open source stuff that's been going on the past couple weeks. So. That's what we're going to do next. We're going to dive into that. And the first thing that I thought was really interesting was a story I picked up on Dig, which talks about Korea actually building or designing a city to run open source throughout the whole city, which I think is just fantastic. I don't know. There's been a lot of talk lately about...
The city of open source.
Yes. Shangri-La.
Where everyone rides a Segway.
I mean, it just seems really cool. There's been a lot of talk in the news and especially in the open source community lately about different organizations that, for whatever reason, like whole countries will just say, hey, we're not going to run Microsoft anymore. We're going to switch to Linux or open source platforms because they're free and they work and they're better anyway. So, you know, why pay for Microsoft licenses? And Creo was one of them that said, hey, we're not going to pay for Microsoft licenses anymore. This is ridiculous. I don't know if they're paying full price. I think Microsoft gives, don't they give out I know they give out educational discounts or something. And don't they also give out to third world countries, like, I don't know, Windows for $5 or something like that?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. I think they do that. But anyway, Korea was
That's
one
very
of the
generous of
yeah, you know, hey, you know, you got to try something, I guess. But so Korea was one of the countries that just said, hey, we're not going to pay for any more Microsoft licenses. And I know there was a story about the CEO of Linspire had offered to give them like a million licenses or an unlimited amount of licenses for like $3 million, you know, Linux for everybody, woohoo. And so that's kind of cool. But now actually they've come out and they've said, hey, we're going to try to designate one city as like open source only. And they're just going to run open source applications and try to make the whole thing work on open source so that everyone's PCs, all the libraries, whatever's running, you know, PC technology will be running Linux and be running open source applications. And I don't know. I just thought it was really, really cool. I guess they're having some sort of a competition to try to figure out who's, you know, what the best city is. I guess cities can apply, but there was something in here about the Ministry of the Interior or whatever had earmarked 4.1 million won. I don't know how. 4.1 billion won for this year just to start this project.
Sounds like a lot.
Who knows? It may be like $30 or something. You know, they just.
I wish the Bureau of Motor Vehicles here was running open source because last time I went to get my license, they told me my computers were down.
Oh,
had to come
really?
Back like another day, yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
Did you have to wait in line a long time before they told you that?
No.
To wait like 3 hours.
There was no one there. I should have been suspicious right off the bat.
What is this? Where is everybody? Computers are down.
Yeah.
That's funny. So anyway, I thought that was kind of cool. I thought that was kind of a cool story out there this week. I just picked it up off a dig, like I said. The other one that I think is really cool involves a search engine that we're all familiar with, Google. I noticed out there that they're actually going to be developing some of their applications for Linux for the first time, which is kind of cool. Google, it runs, as far as I know, everybody that I've talked to or all the stories I've read, it seems like they run a ton of Linux. I mean, if you go out to their website and look for job postings, which I've done, you'll see that there are a lot of Linux administrator systems available. They're looking for people to help support, patches and packages and things that they run. I mean, so they obviously run on Linux, but to date, I mean, I don't know of a single application that they've actually ported to run natively on Linux. All their applications run on Windows, which I guess it makes sense. I mean, most people run Windows. You'd think if you run Linux anyway, I mean, you'd think the first thing you'd come out with is, Linux applications, but I don't know. But they're actually going to do that. They're actually porting the Picasso photo editing program that they developed. They're going to port that over to Linux. I'm not sure exactly when it's going to be available, but
I guess something interesting is that they're not really creating binaries, though, right? They're combining it with Wine so that you're using the Windows API interface on there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I guess the Codeweavers folks that developed the Crossover Office Suite, which uses Wine, and it allows you to run like Microsoft Office applications and things like that. There's like a specific set of applications. I think there's even some games that you can run on Crossover Office or things like that. But they're actually helping Google to just take the Picasa code and run it in Wine on Linux. So yeah, it's not a native, there's no native Linux binaries or there's nothing. It's just the Windows application that's going to be running on it. But still, it's cool. I mean, it's a start. I mean, I think if they would develop more of their applications to run on Linux, it would be great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the one thing I do use on Linux, it's not running natively on Linux per se, but I use the personal desktop, which I don't know. People say, oh, they track where you go if you use the personal desktop and stuff like that. But I do use the personal desktop on my Linux machines because they've got a lot of cool stuff you can put on your homepage. And so I always have Google as my homepage anyway. When I start the browser, Google comes up because that's usually the first place I want to go. But so I do use that, but that's not really running native. It's just running out of the browser. It's not mm-hmm. really an application that's running on Linux. So I don't know. I thought it was cool. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
You actually had an interesting comment earlier about wanting to maybe run something out of your home to do like sort of a PBX type of a setup at home.
I guess there's an application called Asterisk.
Right.
Something that I thought would be interesting is to have you know, all the different rooms of your house connected together to, you know, like a PBX of sorts in the basement, maybe, so that you know, you can call one room to the next, or you know, it basically have your house set up like a small office.
Yeah.
You know, you want to call so and so's room or something. You know, kids are upstairs. Hey, come down for dinner. You know, you
can just
dial their extension
instead
of yelling throughout your home.
Right. Yeah, I think that's great. I mean, I've been interested in it too, and I've actually downloaded the Asterisk at Home distribution, and I never did get it running. I was trying to load it on like a 486 or something. I don't know, it didn't really work that well. I mean, I was barely being able to run the latest distribution of Linux on there. I think it was actually like a 350 megahertz AMD chip, and I didn't have time to mess with it. I started getting into some other things.
Something you could also do with that probably is have a front-end message where you could pick who you want to talk to and have it route it to whichever phone in the house is theirs.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you get kind of the, well, similar functionality to having multiple lines.
Automatic call routing or something like that where, you could set up...
Press one for Aaron.
Right. I mean, you could set up voicemail boxes for each of, if you had like, you know, 10 people in your house or something. I mean, each one of them could have their own voicemail box, and then they could just go in and get their messages. And I mean, it also enables, if you go out to the Asterisk homepage, it's asterisk.org. We'll probably have to do a segment on this at some point. I know there's been other shows that have done. System did one on Asterisk, and a lot of the other shows have talked about it. In fact, if you listen to the Linux Link Tech Show, those guys run Asterisk out of their house, and they do their call-in interviews via Asterisk. So,
It also functions as a voice over IP.
Right. A lot of people use it for voice over IP. It's SIP compliant, which is kind of the standard for voice over IP. It also does H.2 or H.323 for like conferencing and things like that. So, I mean, if you go out to their their homepage, asterisk.org, and look at the features page. I mean, there's not enough. If I went through all these features, we'd be here for the rest of the night. I mean, the amount of features actually on the page scrolls down like about five pages for all the different features and protocols it supports and all that kind of stuff. So,
can it do my laundry?
It cannot do your laundry, but it does some other really cool stuff. So. Does something called Dundee. That's kind of, I don't know, to check that out. Distributed Universal Number Discovery. There's a lot of neat ways to use it. So I know it's pretty one of the most exciting open source projects going on right now. And, I think we'll definitely have to check it out at some point, maybe do a segment on it. So, all right. So at this point, maybe one more thing we should do before we actually get into the first segment is just talk about ourselves as far as, kind of our background and, you know, what we've done. We talked a little bit about that already with we both kind of Red Hat users. I'm a VI guy. I don't know. I use VI. I'm not a big Emacs fan. I don't know. What about you? Are you?
VI.
Yeah, VI. Yeah. So that kind of defines your status in the, people associate. Oh, you're a VI guy. Okay, you can come sit with us. It's okay.
I get people calling me like, I can't do VI. Do it for me. Just push the button.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because it's like, just VI the file. It's like, you know, once you're used to it.
Once you get used to it.
You can manipulate things very easily.
Yeah. It took me a while to get used to VI, actually. I preferred, there's another editor out there called Joe. Have you ever used Joe?
No, I used Ed for a while.
Of course, yeah. You're not that old, come on. Ed's great too, though. I mean, all the basic utilities, cat, awk, sed, all that kind of stuff. If you've used those, then VI is a natural, I think, because it's, you know, based on the same kind of stuff. But I don't know. I've been around IT for about 10 years. Started out as a network administrator. And did a lot of, I work, actually, speaking of Asterisk, I worked for a business telephone distributor. They sold business telephone systems. That's what they did. A company out in Arizona called Intertel Technologies is where I started with IT, and worked for them for a few years. And then I moved on to storage, working with enterprise storage and SANs and stuff like that. and I've been doing that for the past six years or so, and love that. Still do it. That's still the bread and butter. So that works pretty well. That's pretty much my background, and I've always been interested in Linux and open source technologies. I thought open source, you know, the idea behind open source and how it's all community driven and people, you know, contribute code and all that kind of stuff. I was like, man, that's great. So I've always been interested in it, and really, you know, when I heard about, started listening to some podcasts and hearing more about shows like Lug Radio and Linux Link Tech Show and things like that, and I was like, man, maybe there is an interest for some sort of a media outlet for open source. So got the idea to start up the show, and here we are with episode one. So, So what about you, Ben? What about your background a little bit?
Well, I guess I've been in IT for about 7 years. I started a real small company where we did everything from, you know, configuring PBXs, phone punch downs, LAN drops, you know, people's desktops, and I think we had, you know, like two NT boxes as servers or something like that.
Right.
So, yeah, very small environment. Went into working on backups, backup infrastructure for some larger companies in Cincinnati here. Kind of migrated that into data storage, which is kind of where I met you.
Right.
And have been working in that ever since. It's a neat field. I think you get to be involved in a lot of different technologies.
Right.
Because, you know, everybody needs some data storage, right? You
can't, yeah. I mean, it's definitely. I mean, it's something that companies can't live without anymore. Is you know, large amounts of storage, and it just keeps growing and growing. So
I think I mentioned earlier, I started using Red Hat around version 6.1. It was a little frustrating back then; didn't quite work a lot of times. But I kind of fell out of it for a little bit and got back into it. I think we were talking about some things. I started a website of my own just as a for fun kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, for sharing, you know, photos from parties or whatever.
to check that out.
I won't tell you that website yet. But when I tried to start doing that with the Windows, saying, okay, I want to be able to FTP things, I want to be able to, you know, have email, web content, all these things, and it's like a very frustrating process to try and get all that set up on Windows, and you're like, well, you know, what can I use for an email server that's free? Not much, you know.
Yeah, all the Windows.
What? There's several included in your Linux distribution
already?
Yeah,
amazing. Yeah,
it is amazing that the amount of functionality that you can get.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. All right. Well, what we're going to do now is we're going to go ahead and jump right into the first segment. We're going to be talking about an application called QEMU, and what it is it's a virtualization software. Allows you to run other OSs on your OS without actually, you know, having to reboot and all that. So it'd be pretty cool. So let's jump right into it. Here we go. All right, so we're here to discuss server virtualization. This segment's all about server virtualization. And specifically, we're gonna be talking about QEMU.
Aaron, can you tell us, what is virtualization?
Oh, I'm glad you asked, Ben.
Oh.
Server virtualization is when you take one piece of hardware, say it's a really powerful piece of hardware, and you want to split that up into many smaller servers. Maybe you want to run Windows and Linux and maybe Mac OS on there all at the same time. With virtualization, it allows you to actually do that. It's very popular in business environments. And another form of virtualization is maybe where you take a lot of servers and you want to combine them together to make one big server. That's another form of virtualization, but generally that's referred to as grid computing. We're not going to be talking about grid computing today, but we will be talking about server virtualization.
All right, you get grid computing or Beowulf. Another thing that's cool about virtualization that we're discussing is all of this you can run at the same time on the host.
Right.
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 So, yeah. I mean, you could have a service running on one type of OS delivering web content or something to another image you have running on that same machine.
Exactly.
Kind of neat.
Yep. Definitely.
You mentioned QEMU. What other virtualization software exists?
Well, the biggest one is going to be VMware. VMware is definitely probably the biggest player in the market, especially in the business arena. The There's other ones out there, but VMware, it's owned by EMC, a company that you're familiar with.
I am.
We're both familiar with, really, but you in particular these days. VMware, like I said, is owned by EMC, and they have several different flavors. They have a workstation flavor, a flavor they call GSX, which I think runs out of Windows, and a flavor and Linux, I guess, and an ESX flavor, which is more like the enterprise version. And the other one that's really coming on the scene now is an open source player, which is, it's called Xen. And Xen is actually going to make it into some of the distributions as part of the core OS pretty soon. Xen is open source virtualization. You need specific kernels compiled for Xen to run it, but it's going to be released with Red Hat, SUSE, I know, and it'll probably make it into all the other less or minor distributions like Debian and all of those. It'll probably make it into those too. So really cool stuff. But you do have to have specific kernels compiled to work with Xen, and that's a little bit of a drawback. That drawback actually doesn't exist in QEMU.
Cool.
Yeah.
You mentioned it doesn't run on Windows yet?
Xen. Yeah, Xen does not run Windows yet, although it's reported that that may change. We'll just have to see. I know it's possible because in the beginning there was a lot of talk about getting Windows to run, and then all of a sudden, somebody put the kibosh on it.
It might be one of those things where it may work if you tweak it the right way, but maybe they don't want you to necessarily be doing that to avoid any license issues or things like that.
Right. I think it's possible, but right now it's not something that's done.
I guess tell us about the system we're running this on today.
Okay, yeah. The system we're running on is a AMD 2.8 gigahertz processor. It's got about a gig of RAM in it and a couple of hard drives, a 30 gig hard drive and a 300 gig hard drive, actually. So that's what we're going to be running on. We do have Fedora Core 4 loaded. We just loaded the base install and then used apt-get and actually Synaptic to bring it up to speed. So it's actually at the latest patch levels and everything.
And this is a fairly well-built system. Do you think, you probably wouldn't need to have all this to run QEMU necessarily?
No, not necessarily. In fact, you can run QEMU on pretty much any old system as long as it's got like the 2.4 or the 2.6 kernel. And the most important part of QEMU is a kernel module called KQEMU. Now, QEMU is completely open source. KQEMU is proprietary. If you go out to the website, we'll probably flash that up, the website up on the screen. And it is proprietary, but it's available free of charge. What that means is that typically in the distributions, if you go download an RPM for QEMU, it won't have the KQEMU accelerator module built into it. You'll have to go compile that by hand. So we're going to be compiling it by hand today. It's fairly simple, but we're going to compile the KQEMU module in with QEMU, and that accelerator module is really going to provide a lot of additional speed.
What are some of the special software prereqs that we need to compile?
Okay, let's talk about that. Obviously there's the QEMU base distribution, which mm-hmm. we'll go out and get. There's also the KQEMU accelerator module, which you need to download. Those are both your standard tar.gz files that you can get at the website. You're also going to need a couple other things. You're going to need the SDL libraries. SDL is a way to, it's a video something. I have to edit this out.
It's a,
what is it?
Library.
Video platform?
Yeah.
Video.
Well, it's a set of libraries for programmers to make calls to for their video or for their X Windows type whatever.
So it's a video platform used with...
Yeah, what is a good term for that? It's like GTK or whatever.
Right, similar to GTK or QT or any of those.
QT.
But you're going to need SDL because it runs out of SDL. That's a definite. You're also going to need GCC 32. When the newer versions of GCC came out, GCC 4.0, QEMU does not compile well under GCC 4.0. So you're going to need to go out and download GCC 32, and we'll show you how to use GCC 32 to do the compiling. The other big one that you're going to need is the kernel development libraries. Lately with Fedora Core 4, which is what we're running on, when you set up the operating system, they don't load the development libraries. but you need the development libraries in order to compile the KQEMU module, which we talked about a little bit ago. So you're going to need to go out and download using apt-get or yum or whatever your favorite package manager is. You're going to need to get the kernel-devel libraries and make sure those get installed for your kernel version before you begin.
So Aaron, let's install QEMU.
All right, let's do it. So like we mentioned, this is the system that we have here. This is the desktop on the system that we mentioned earlier. I'm going to go ahead and just open up a command prompt there. We've already downloaded the base package and the KQEMU module. As you can see here, we've extracted itself into the QEMU.0.8.0 directory. So we're going to go ahead in there. Okay. The other thing is, the first thing you need to do after you untar the QEMU module is to go inside your directory and actually untar the KQEMU module inside here. Actually, the configuration program is going to look for KQEMU, a KQEMU directory, inside of the QEMU directory. So make sure when you untar it inside the QEMU directory. And it's actually there now. So what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and configure this with some special options. So we're going to do a ./configure. The first thing we're going to do, we talked about earlier that you need to use GCC 32 and not the default GCC, which is GCC 4.0, which comes with Fedora Core 4. So we're going to specify in the configure options that you need to use the GCC 32. We might want to talk a little bit here about difficulty level too before we get too far. In terms of difficulty here, I mean, there's a couple things you need to know before you even begin this. One is, obviously, you're going to need to know a little bit about Linux. You know, hopefully you're running Linux at home already anyway, or on some system at work, whatever. So you're familiar with Linux and Unix in general. The other thing you're going to have to know is how to compile packages. So if you've never compiled a package before, this probably isn't the thing you want to start with. Maybe something a little easier, like TuxRacer or something, I don't know. But you know, probably you're going to want to start with something else. But if you've done at least configured a few packages and you know how ./configure works and make and that kind of stuff, yeah, you'll be able to do okay. Probably on a scale of 1 to 10, it's what, by 5 maybe?
Maybe 5, yeah. I guess the other trick too is getting GCC 3.2 on there as well.
Exactly.
You know,
I mean, yeah, and all the prereqs we talked about before too. I mean, you're going to have to know either using apt-get, like we said, you're going to have to know how to use those utilities to be able to pull those down and install them. So we're assuming that you're there already. So we're going to do a ./configure. We're going to add a couple of options here. The first one is -- cc equals gcc32, which is going to tell the make file to actually use gcc32 instead of gcc4.0. There's an extra option in here too that we need to do, which is -, or three minuses in my case, host-cc equals gcc32. It's just another part of the program that runs. We want to make sure that that uses GCC 32 as well. The final option we're going to put in here, this is kind of something that's kind of neat, is you can compile this with for various sound engines. We're using also sound, so we want to have sound support for all those lovely Windows startup sounds and chimes and stuff.
Or whatever you may be doing in
yeah,
there.
Whatever you may be doing, exactly. You may want sound. So we're actually going to, you actually need to explicitly tell the configure script which sound engine you want to use. We're going to be using the also sound engine, like I mentioned, so we're just going to put in there -- enable-also. That's all we need to do to get it going. So we're going to go ahead and hit enter. It's going to go through and it's going to run the configure script. And it comes back with, right here at the top, it says the C compiler and the host C compiler is GCC32 like we expected. We mentioned the SDL support, comes back and tells you, yep, you've got SDL, you're good to go. And then also down here, the also support comes back yes, because we told it to enable also. And then down at the very bottom, the KQEMU support comes back yes, which is great. So we should be set to go. If you didn't have the SDL libraries, it would come back and complain. If you didn't have the kernel devel libraries, it would come back and complain that it couldn't compile KQEMU, even if you did download the module, because it couldn't find the proper kernel devel libraries to use to compile it with. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and compile it. Here we go. Just type in make, and it's going to go ahead and make it. Now, we've already made this before, so actually there's nothing to do. It came back and said, oh, sorry, there's really nothing to do. But it takes about 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Depends on the system you're using. It'll take 10 or 15 minutes to compile, to do the make. And then you run the make install. We've actually already done that too. I'm not going to do it again because it's just going to come back with the same kind of result. You do the make install. That goes out maybe 30 seconds. You're done. It's going to go out and install all of the binaries where they need to go. And then you're pretty much done. You're ready to go. So that's basically it for the install.
I guess we also need to do the detmod mod probe for KQEMU, right?
Right, exactly. Now that we've actually made the module, we need to do the detmod to tell the OS where it is. So we'll do a detmod. We can actually go ahead and do another one of those. That's going to go out, take a couple seconds, and make sure it pulls in all of the new modules that you might have created.
I guess from reading this, the KQEMU is actually a kernel module that gets loaded.
That's right.
Is that why it's considered the accelerator, because it's running in the kernel instead of as kind of like an application?
Right. Yeah. It is actually running as a kernel module, like Ben said. I don't know if that's why they consider it a kernel module. I mean, I don't know if that's why, but there are some things that you'll see when you actually load KQEMU. It'll actually go out. If you do a mod probe, KQEMU, which we'll do in just a minute, and then actually put a major equals zero at the end of that, it'll go out and create a device in the dev directory called dev KQEMU. You got to make sure that's there, because if that's not there, KQEMU won't start when you go to run QEMU, and everything's going to run a lot slower. So, all right, so we're going to run the mod probe now. So mod probe, KQEMU, and like I said, I'm going to put in a major equals zero here. That'll go out and it'll load the module, and it'll create that device. Now that we've done all that, we're actually ready to load our first OS and see how it runs. What should we load first, Ben?
I don't know. Why don't we start with Windows XP?
Windows XP, sounds good. Let's do it. I actually have a, we should probably talk about how to build an image first of all, because in order to run Windows especially, you're going to have to install the OS, and before you do that, you have to create an image file to use with QEMU. So we can actually do that right now. If we do, there is a application or a helper application within QEMU that gets installed with QEMU called QEMU-IMG. That'll actually go out and create the image for you. So you can do a QEMU-IMG space, I believe it's create, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the image name, call it whatever you want, call it test.image or anything. And then you tell it what size you want. We'll create a 1 gig image. It goes out and creates it. And the neat thing is if we look at if we do a ls out here, we'll actually see the test.image that's been created. If we do an ll and grep for it, if we do that, you can actually go out here and see that it actually is a 1 gigabyte file. But the neat thing is it's just an image file, so it actually isn't 1 gig as far as the file system is concerned. It looks like 1 gig. But it's actually not 1 gig, and still you start putting information in there. So that's kind of cool, because you could create a lot of these image files and start filling them up a little bit at a time, but it's not going to eat up your whole hard drive, for example, right away. So that's how you create an image file. So let's go ahead and we'll run Windows XP. Now, what I did was I created an image file, started QEMU with that blank image file and with the Windows XP CD-ROM in the drive, so I passed all the proper parameters, and it actually came up, recognized that as a hard drive, and started installing Windows like you normally would. It was really, really pretty basic.
I guess by default, QEMU will load in the machine CD-ROM and some other things like the mouse and keyboard.
It actually doesn't. You actually have to pass those parameters to it.
Okay.
It's a little bit difficult, but it gives you a lot of flexibility. I mean, it's a typical Linux, Unix application, you know.
Right.
Everything is a parameter that you want to pass to it. Once you figure out what you want to do, though, you could either, you know, you could script it, you could do whatever, but there's a lot of different options, like booting from a CD-ROM is a little bit different than booting from a hard drive, and, you know, you have to tell it to enable sound, you pass how much memory you want, all of those kind of things. So let's go ahead and do. Let's go ahead and start that Windows image, and I'll talk about some of the options actually. So we're going to do QEMU, and then we're going to start passing options. Well, the first option we're going to pass is where the hard drive is. So that's minus HDA, and then we'll tell it what the where that image file is that we talked about before. Our image file is called winxp.img. Very creative. The next thing we want to do probably is, if you have a CD-ROM, you could specify a CD-ROM here, but probably all we're going to really want to do is specify how much memory to use. Like I said, we have a gig of memory on the machine, so I want this to run kind of fast, so I'm going to tell it to use 512 megabytes of memory out of that gig. So I'm just going to do a minus M, 512. The other thing you might want to do is enable sound. We don't have sound hooked up right now. We don't have speakers hooked up to this box right now, but you could do a minus enable sound. That would enable your sound. Actually, that's changed a little bit in 8.0. We'll talk about that in a minute. But there's some other options you might want to pass. This should actually suffice for now. I'm going to go ahead and put an ampersand on the end so that we'll still have a command prompt here. The first thing you notice, that really quickly, it actually splashes up the BIOS screen. It's actually just a normal BIOS screen. It emulates specific hardware. And what the author did, Fabrice Bellard, I'm sure I messed up his name, but what he did was he actually emulated some very generic hardware types so that everything possible could run on it. So he did a really good job at just emulating the very base hardware, things that would run but would be compatible with lots of different things. And so he did a really good job of that. All right, let's take a break here and watch Windows load. It's exciting. All right, so the Windows system is actually up now, and it took about somewhere between, 120 seconds?
1 to 2 minutes.
1 to 2 minutes to come up. So pretty quick. Once again, the KQEMU module is important. Without the KQEMU module, it probably would have taken about 10 minutes to get to the Windows desktop. But 1 to 2 minutes, not that bad when you consider that in the background here, you can see we're actually running the Linux operating system is still running, and this is running inside of it. So just to prove that this is actually Windows and it's not a some sort of special screenshot or something like that, or a movie playing in the background.
Your background on there.
We'll go ahead and start up Word or something just to, if I can. There, that's easier. So this is actually start up Word, and
there it goes.
It goes. It's going up. There it is.
There you have it.
There's Word.
Pretty neat.
Yeah. So if I put this up here, I can actually type in some whatever we want to type in here. We can a little bit of a delay, not much though. I mean, you can actually run most of your applications out of here. I've run Windows Media Player before. I've run all the whole Office suite. Some other special applications, little applications. I actually had a case where I needed to run BNC at one point, and because I was behind a firewall and blah, 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 I couldn't run it, but I had to run it through Windows. That was the only way I could get out. And so I actually just fired up QEMU with a small Windows image and started up BNC, and it worked great. So for things like that, it's perfect. You can run your essential Windows apps. You might not want to run all your, World of Warcraft and all your games.
Games are probably not going to run very well.
Probably not going to run very well. Yeah. But other than that, it works great. You can install software, and it works just like a normal OS. At this point, what we'll do is we'll actually do one more demo.
Yeah.
And we'll actually run a Linux OS. One of the really cool things about this is all the latest, all the distros that are out there now for Linux, the latest version comes out, you got to go get it, Nopix 4.0 or whatever it happens to be. The cool thing is you can actually download those live CDs and you can run them like that under QEMU just to check them out, see what's going on.
Yeah, without having to reload your whole system.
Without having to reload your whole, even exiting your system,
Right.
Or maybe you want to try testing out a different kernel, the latest and greatest kernel, but you don't want to screw things up on your system. Mm-hmm. You could actually just start up QEMU, test the kernel out, see how it goes.
Yeah, not when even a done, reboot or anything.
Blow it away, exactly. So we're going to go ahead and shut this down now, and it'll take just a minute to shut down Windows, and then we'll come back and fire up Linux distribution, see how that goes.
Aaron, out. Is it possible to run QEMU off of an image that you already have? Like, say, your PC already has Windows on it, can you take that hard drive out, shove it in your Linux box, and bring it up in a QEMU session?
Right. Yes and no. The answer is yes and no. Yes, you could do it, but no, you probably don't want to do it. And you might be able to guess why.
As I said earlier, it's virtualizing hardware.
Right.
So you're getting...
It's got its own...
All new...
Right.
Motherboard.
Right. If you did that, your Windows install would actually be detecting, oh, I found a new motherboard. Oh, I found a new hard drive. Hey, I found a new mouse. Wow, this is fantastic. But if you've ever done that in Windows before, replaced all that stuff and tried to start up your old Windows image, you know it's not that fantastic. Windows doesn't do a really good job trying to work out what was there before and what's there now. And to be honest, it does it a little bit better in Windows XP in 2000, but you don't want to do that if you can help it. So if you've got the hard drive space and you can just carve off an image and use that image, you're going to be a lot happier than messing with your actual Windows image on your hard drive. But you could do it. So it's a good point. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. What we're going to do now is we're going to load up DSL. I don't know if you ever used DSL, but DSL is great. It's a 50 megabyte Linux distribution. You can put it on a USB keychain.
Whatever you got, that's 50 megabyte.
Keychain device, yeah. I mean, anything you got, really. It fits. Obviously, it fits on a CD-ROM. You can take it around with you. It has basically all the tools that you're ever going to want just for some, you know, your basic web browsing and sound and all that kind of stuff. It's already built in. Very small, very handy. So what we did was we just downloaded the latest DSL, which is when we went out, it was DSL 2.1. And so we're going to use QEMU to start that up as well. So let's just go over the command line real quick. There are a few differences here. We have the ISO image, and we're actually going to boot up the ISO image just like it was a CD-ROM, but we didn't actually burn it to a CD-ROM. It's just sitting out on the hard drive. So we're going to do QEMU, and in this time, instead of doing dash HDA for the hard drive, we're going to do a dash CD-ROM and say, well, I want to use this file as the CD-ROM, like I had a CD-ROM sitting in the tray. So I've got the path to the ISO image. And then I'm also going to pass another option, which is minus boot. And then the different options there that you can put after minus boot is C for the C drive, D for the CD-ROM drive, A for floppy drive, if you want to do that. But we're going to tell it D for boot off the CD-ROM. And this time I'm only going to give it 256 meg because, you know, DSL doesn't require a whole lot. 256 should be more than sufficient for DSL. Mm-hmm. So let's do it. Here you can see DSL is already up. It did it just like that since it didn't actually have to spin the CD-ROM because it's just a file. It came up and it's ready to boot. We're going to go ahead and pass some, just so that we can see it okay on the screen, we're going to pass some options for DSL. So we're going to do DSL. What was the option?
VGA equals 789.
VGA equals 789, just so that the resolution fits on the TV. And it's going to go ahead and come up and load DSL. Should only take a couple minutes. We're going to cut away and come right back.
So Aaron's brought up DSL Linux on the QEMU emulator, and it's finished loading. And there's a host of applications here that we can pick from. If you've never used DSL and you've got QEMU installed, you can fire it up there without even rebooting or interrupting right. Anything else you're doing.
That's right. Don't need to install it. Just put in that, have that ISO image handy and tell it to use that as a CD-ROM and you're good to go. Same thing here. I mean, DSL came up maybe a couple minutes. Took a couple minutes to get through. There's, when you run DSL, you have to give it some configuration options, real simple, but go through the blue screens and tell it what resolution you want to use and what kind of mouse you have and things like that. We didn't want to bore you with that, so we just skip right to this. But yeah, it's working great. It's actually using, if you can see this, I'll try to get a close-up of the resource monitor here, but it's actually telling, you know, we're using 1% of the CPU. It thinks we're using 1% of the CPU. It thinks we're using 18.5 meg of 250 megs of RAM because we specified 256 megs of RAM, things like that. So, I mean, you know, it thinks it's on its own system and it's running great, but it runs. It's perfect. So let's talk about a couple other things just real quick, just to kind of end this segment up. One of the things with QEMU actually the author of QEMU, Fabrice Bellard, I mentioned him earlier, he's written a whole host of really cool apps for Linux. So you'll notice when you go out to the QEMU site, if you back up a little bit and go to the main website, you'll see things in there like FFmpeg. FFmpeg, people use that for transcoding video from one format to the other. And if you're not familiar with Linux at all, but you have an iPod, you might be familiar with FFmpeg and not even know it, because there's an application out there called the Videora iPod Converter, which will take videos and convert them into iPod-friendly formats. And that actually in the background is running Cygwin, which is a Windows Linux environment, and FFmpeg to do actually all of the transcoding. It's running that in the background. So FFmpeg's out there. A lot of people use it. We use it actually to produce the show, to transcode the video into various formats that we publish. So FFmpeg is another great app that he wrote. And there's some other really cool stuff. So if you get a chance, go out to the main website and check, look at some of the things he's doing. He's doing some really great stuff. Maybe we can get him on the show at some point to talk about QEMU and some other things. A couple of things about QEMU that I'll point out that are really cool that you can do with some of the bigger packages. So you wouldn't expect them to be here, but they are. One of them is called a snapshot mode, where you can actually start an image. Like, let's say you start your Windows image, and you know you're afraid because Windows is kind of vulnerable to a few viruses out there. There's a few vulnerabilities, and you may not want to actually infect your image with viruses that are floating around. So there's actually, you could use a snapshot mode in this case. And what snapshot mode does is it basically writes all the changes. Instead of writing them to the image file, it writes them to like a cached place on the hard drive or something. So you're not actually making any changes to the image file. You're caching all those. And then at the end of your session, if you want to, you can go back out and say, go ahead and commit those changes. Or you can say, no way, I just got a virus because, you know, I started the thing up 2 minutes later, I had five viruses. So
I just clicked yes to the I love you virus.
That's right. I opened up my email and it ran all the executables. So you may not want to do that. So actually what you can do is you can just say, you know, no, I'm not going to commit the changes. You shut down your operating system, close out QEMU, and the next time you start it, you're going to be right back where you started from. So that's really cool for things like that. It's also really cool for development work. If you're doing development work and you want to have a good known state to start from, and then you go in and break it.
I guess it's similar to like if you ever played on a game emulator, they usually got something like that where you can save off your image.
That's right.
And then
yeah.
You just start right back.
Take
up
a snapshot.
Where you,
yeah.
Left
save
off.
Exactly. Exactly. Save the memory state here, right. And then you keep going. Exactly. It's a very similar kind of thing. The other thing I wanted to mention that really I think back in December the most recent version of QEMU was released. It's version 0.8.0, which we're running now, and a lot of things were added in that. Fabrice did a really good job, and the other people I'm assuming that we're working on it did a great job of adding some things that were missing, like USB support is now there. Additional sound libraries are there. So before there was just basically like Adlib and OSS were the only ones you could use, but now there's ALSA. There's some other ones in there, and so they added a lot of sound support. They did change around some of the configuration options. I mentioned earlier the dash enable sound option, which is actually changed now to dash sound something, and you can actually emulate several different kinds of sound cards. You can actually emulate a Sound Blaster. You can emulate, I think the other one's an Adlib you can emulate, so... there's various sound cards you can emulate. So the newest version is great. If you've used it in the past, maybe you've used it back in the 0.7 days where, you know, there were some things that weren't working, admittedly. You might want to go back out and try the 0.8.0 version because there's been a lot of things that have been added. It's really been cleaned up. Additional support for other operating systems like 64-bit operating systems, PowerPC, lots of stuff out there that you can emulate now. So if you haven't used it in a while, go out, give it a try. Anything else?
That's it.
That's it. All right. Thanks a lot, and we'll move on to the next segment.
Well, in fact, we won't be having another segment this time. Our QEMU ran a little bit long, and I guess we wanted to spare everyone from having a two-hour program. Everyone loves open source, but
there is such a thing as too much of a good thing.
Too much of a good thing, and a little bit goes a long way, and there's all that kind of stuff.
Right,
so.
Right. And that leaves us with stuff to do for next time. So
right.
Right, yeah. Next time, the next episode, the one thing that we're definitely going to cover, if you go out and look at my blog on the website, you'll see that I made reference to this, is iPod Linux, and specifically running iPod on, running iPod Linux on an iPod Nano. There, I got it out. Too many iPods in that sentence. So we'll be loading Linux on an iPod Nano and doing a bunch of cool stuff that you could use to impress your friends and make them think that you're more of a geek than they already think you are. So we'll definitely be doing that. A couple other things we wanted to tell you about, like we said at the beginning of the show. I mean, make sure you go out and look at the website if you have spare cash. Really, I mean, the whole show up to this point we've done just on stuff that we've had laying around that my house or your house, and we need to get Brian to contribute. But this basically it's all stuff that we've had laying around, but it does take a lot of hardware resources to do the rendering and transcoding into the various formats that we're trying to publish and all that kind of stuff. So if you got spare cash, send it our way. Go out to the website. There's a little donate button. You can click and donate $1, $2, whatever you want. It's fine with us. If it helps us to, if you like the show and you think it's a good thing, you want to see more episodes, definitely go out and donate a few bucks. We'd be glad to take that. And everything you donate there we'll use for something in the show, maybe new hardware, maybe things like that. Make the show better.
Cameras.
Lights, cameras, actions, all that kind of good stuff. So definitely go out and check that out. Check out the new poll. There'll be a new poll on the website here shortly. So definitely go out and check that out. And keep watching. Hopefully we'll have another show out as soon as we can get it up and running. Until then, I'm Aaron Newcomb.
And I'm Ben Weber.
And keep watching The Source.
Seacrest out.
That's bad.
This week on The Source, we're going to be discussing open source news.
And we're going to be learning how to shut off Ben's refrigerator. I think it's going to run for a while. I think we're going to have to pull the plug or something. Make sure those get installed for your kernel version before you begin. Ah! Well, that's a good segue.
So I said it's a Mabel, Mabel.
Actually, we don't even have the keyboard or the mouse or anything.
I guess right now we cut over to doing the install anyway.
Yeah, this would be a outtake that we're gonna have. See the lovely blue screen. Did you notice that?
Or just, yeah.
Okay. It's like
especially when you
blue!
Were yelling. Ah.
Sorry. Computer.
Hello, computer.
Hello, computer. All right. I'll put that down there for now. I'll put this down there too. Pretend like it was always there.
Okay, so.
What did we just talk about? Right. All right, so let's go ahead and install this puppy. That sounded gay.
Install this puppy?
Yeah, let me do that again.
You don't like that?
No, I don't like that.
Can I do that? Everyone can see my bald spot.
Sure. All right, let's start that part over. So you can say, all right, I guess we're on.
Let's install.
No, it's not going to cut it. It's a family-friendly show. Or it used to be. Cut!
Let's watch it.
Yeah, that's going to be a huge bomb. Here, you want to shut this down and I'll run over and...
Oh!
Probably should have showed him the monitor, too. That stool's hard on the butt. Mm-hmm.